Under guard of six warriors who could barely stay on their feet, Team Melikyu, including Han, had been herded into the Yamask chamber and left there to marinate in Blorash jelly, while the female Shaper and the cadre of slayers departed Kalula. From deeper inside the Minshal had come the sounds of at least three craft lifting out of their berthing spaces. An hour had passed since then, and something strange was beginning to happen to the Blorash jelly. Though it had held everyone fast when they had first been thrown into it, the jelly was losing viscosity. When it liquefied to the point that Leia could sit upright, she immediately started to crawl on hands and knees toward Han, who had been returning slowly to consciousness the whole while. The first words out of his mouth were, "What stinks?" "Welcome back to the fun," Paige yelled from across the chamber. Han raised his right hand in a curt wave to the captain, Kip, Raw, and Melikyu, who were more or less sitting up in the adhesive pool. He cut his eyes back to Leia.
"Sasso, Furfur, dead," Leia said, almost swallowing the word.
On the far side of the chamber, close to half a dozen Yuuzhan Vong guards were either dozing or passed out. "If this Blorash jelly keeps liquefying at the same rate," Leia said, "we should be free in no time." She barely got the sentence out when a priest shuffled into the chamber, accompanied by two ordinary warriors. The six sleeping warriors woke up and attempted to come to attention, but most of them were too weak to stand, let alone snap their fists in salute. Breathing laboriously, the priest picked up one of the military blasters and, with some effort, squeezed off a bolt into the domed ceiling.
"Still functioning, as you appear to be," he said in basic, gazing at his captives.
His filmed eyes focused on Paige.
"And I thought Selvaris a terrible place. You've no obligation to tell me, Captain. But what is it that is peculiar to this cursed world that has brought illness and death on us?"
Paige shook his head in ignorance. "Maybe the insects we call winged stars. But a lot of the ones we saw were also dead or dying. So are Kalula's flitnets."
"Something about their deaths, then," the priest mused. "If it's true, Captain, then you will have a powerful weapon to use against us."
The priest inhaled raggedly.
"I'm dying," he said in disbelief.
"Neither in battle nor honorably, but of disease."
He almost grinned.
"Yun Harla is either laughing or outraged. Who can tell anymore?"
The priest groaned in pain, doubled over, and collapsed on the floor. The six guards also appeared to have died. Thud bugs crept from the warrior's bandoliers and expired. Leia realized that the Blorash had lost all its binding qualities. The entire place seemed to be dying at the same time. The Yamask issued an ear-splitting screech of agony. Its tentacles flailed for several seconds, then the bloated beast bobbed lifelessly to the surface of the agitated pool. A sudden commotion broke out in the antechamber. Kip and Leia called their lightsabers to them, activating the blades, while Paige and Raw hastened for the blasters.
"Hello?" a voice called out.
Into the basin room walked Lando Calrissian, Talon Card, and Shada Dukal, wearing armor-ply combat suits, white helmets and knee-high boots, and armed with lightweight blaster rifles. The hero of T'Nab brought his fingertips to his brow in an informal salute.
"Kip, Captain Paige.
Leia, you've never looked more lovely,"
Lando said.
"What's the situation upside?"
Paige asked.
"Peaceful. We only had to deal with a small skip carrier and a couple of patrol craft."
"Patrol craft?" Paige said. "Kalula was supposed to be a major staging area for Mon Calamari." Lando nodded.
"That's what we thought."
Leia showed Han a skeptical look.
"You knew about this."
Han shrugged.
"I didn't trust this whole operation from the start. I figured we'd be compromised somehow, so I wanted to make sure we had backup.
Sorry I didn't tell you."
Lando watched Han struggle to his feet.
"Are you all right, Han?"
He was bitten by an amphistaff whose venom wasn't working.
Kip said. Lando glanced at the priest and the warriors.
We've seen this everywhere we've been. At the spaceport, in the streets. What's going on?
Oh no. Kip interrupted in a tone of tragic realization. Oh no.
Blood rushed from his face, and his expression turned grim.
I know what happened here, but I didn't want to believe it.
He looked at everyone.
And may the Force help all of us if I'm right.
Everyone was scrambling for shelter. From his perch on the rim of the abyss, Luke could see hundreds of Ferroans massed at the mouths of the tunnels below, the combined light of dozens of glow sticks creating halos around each entrance. Luke could feel Zonama shuddering as the core hyperdrives heated up. He could sense the tension and uncertainty in the Boras, the Seed Partners, the myriad creatures the vast Tempasi supported. He looked into the night sky. For no reason he could fathom, each jump seemed to have brought him closer to a familiarity that had nothing to do with star systems or planets. Even in the most remote realms of the unknown regions, his connection with the Force had never faltered. But with the previous jump, he had begun to hear the whispers of his fellow Jedi, and their urgency told him that it was critical that he, Mara, and the others return. He felt Jason approach from behind him, but didn't turn from the view.
Something has happened, he said finally.
I feel it, Uncle Luke, Jason said. The Jedi, our friends.
It's not only them. The danger is widespread.
Jason came alongside him.
Another Ithor? Another Barab One?
Not yet, Luke said. But a new evil has been unleashed.
By the Yuuzhan Vong?
By the dark side.
Alpha Red, Kip said, as if having trouble believing his own words. Han and Leia traded questioning glances with each other and with Paige. Lando, Talon, and Shaeda did the same.
Is that some sort of curse I'm not familiar with?
Lando asked Kip.
You could say that.
Kip sat down on the basin's curved step.
Alpha Red is the name of a Yuuzhan Vong-specific poison developed by Chiss scientists and Diff Scour's intelligence gang. From what I know about it, and I don't know a lot, the starting point was Baphor tree pollen, and the bioweapon just kept growing from there.
Kip, how do you even know anything about this? Leia asked.
A dubious privilege of being a member of Cal Omas's advisory council, he said. The first batch, the trial batch, was refined about a year ago and tested in secret. It might have been deployed full scale at the time, if not for two things. Our victory at Abak 9 and Vergeer.
A Fosh Jedi of the Old Republic, Leia explained for the benefit of Paige, Melocue, and some of the others. Vergeer lived as a spy among the Yuuzhan Vong for 50 years. She helped rescue our son Jason at Merkur and died at Abak.
This stuff doesn't only kill individual Yuuzhan Vong,
Han said, looking around the chamber.
Kip nodded. You're right about that. It targets some genetic or cellular component that the Yuuzhan Vong share with all their biots, from the smallest right up to the largest.
Han regarded Paige with suspicion.
The captain raised his hands in innocence.
Han, I swear, this is the first I've heard of Alpha Red.
All heads turned to Raw, whose head first stirred. Then the Bothan intelligence agent shrugged nonchalantly.
Alliance Command wanted field assurance that Alpha Red would work outside a laboratory setting. It's been used effectively on captives, but we couldn't be sure what would happen in an uncontrolled environment. When intelligence learned that Kalula had been targeted by the Vong for occupation, it was chosen to be Planet Zero, step one in winning the war.
Melocue loosed a mournful sigh.
Extermination! More of the Bothan Arcry!
His hands curled into claws, Han stormed across the chamber, but he made it only halfway to Raw before Kip wrapped his arms around him in restraint.
That's why Kalula's governor promised a peaceful surrender, Han yelled. Your people let the orbital station fall, just so you could launch this half-witted plan!
Take it easy, Solo, Raw said.
Han sneered. You're no better than the Yuuzhan Vong.
Raw's fur rippled again. He pointed toward the ceiling.
That Shaper and her special warriors are going to take Alpha Red to Yuuzhan Tar. And from there, it's going to spread to other occupied worlds up and down the invasion corridor. So instead of ranting at me, Solo, you should be taking heart. The Vong's days are numbered. The war is essentially over.
You killed them, Melikyu mumbled, then yanked herself from her musings in wide-eyed panic to glare at Raw.
You killed the Wing Stars!
Raw swallowed hard.
You don't know that.
Melikyu collapsed to her knees on the spongy floor, as if her legs had turned to gel.
Don't you realize what you've done? What you've unleashed? If those Yuuzhan Vong craft reach Coruscant, the entire galaxy could be at risk.
What craft? Lando asked. What's she talking about? A couple of enemy vessels went up the well just before you arrived, Paige said. Card whipped his comlink from his belt and activated the call button.
Krev, are you receiving me?
Just barely, Talon.
A deep male voice answered after several moments of static.
Krev, you've got to alert Booster's gunner to destroy every Yuuzhan Vong ship in the area.
Krev Bombassa laughed.
What did you think we've been doing? Not that there's been a whole lot of targets.
Thank the Force,
Melikyu said quietly.
Only one ship got past us. A Corvette analog like nothing we've ever seen. Scaled, with three pairs of pincer arm rock spitters and an uplifted stern.
On the bridge of the Bothan assault cruiser Ralroost, Admiral Creefe swiveled the command chair away from the observation bay to listen to an update from the comm officer. Local space was strewn with warships, but untroubled. Blue Mon Calamari turned calmly below. Elements of the 2nd and 3rd fleets have repositioned to Mon Eran, the human officer said. Grand Admiral Pelion reports that Right to Rule is underway to complement defenses there. Also, two Happen battle groups have arrived from Iceberg 3 to reinforce Mon Calamari home defense forces. Creefe glanced out the observation bay. Ralroost, along with the Star Destroyer Rebel Dream and the cruiser Yald, had relocated to Mon Calamari's moon in preparation for meeting the advancing armada head-on. With the unexpected departure of almost half the enemy armada, some semblance of parity had been established.
Do we have news on the secondary flotilla? Creefe asked.
Not yet, sir. To the best of our knowledge, the flotilla is still traveling coreward along the Perlemian. Cian Sov, Commodore Brand, and other commanders were still adjusting to the fact that the separated cluster had departed by the same route the Yuuzhan Vong had taken to reach Mon Calamari. It was obvious now that the Yuuzhan Vong had no intention of using Tungul or Kalula as fallback or staging positions. Both planets had been diversions. Where was the flotilla bound? Surely Nas Choka couldn't have learned about Coruscant. Was it possible that he had learned of the Alpha Red experiment on Kalula?
No, Creefe told himself.
Admiral, incoming communique from Kashyyyk Relay, the human officer said, pressing his headphones tighter to his ears. Sir, General Kraken and Commanders Farlander and Davip say that, with the whereabouts of the secondary flotilla unknown, the situation at Khontrum has become unstable.
Admiral!
The communications officer interrupted. Following the officer's lead, Creefe swiveled to the long-distance scanner display and couldn't believe his eyes. The armada was tucking in its tentacles, recalling its legions of coral skippers, pickets, and frigates to their carriers.
Enemy is preparing to jump to hyperspace,
a Bothan officer said from his duty station on the port side of the elliptical bridge. Creefe came half out of the command chair in expectancy.
The armada has jumped to light speed, the Bothan updated, bearing coreward.
Creefe dropped back into the command chair as if he had gained 50 kilos.
I don't understand, he muttered, with equal measures of relief and agitation. What in the galaxy just happened?
With the armada engaged in a climactic battle at the distant world of Mon Calamari, there was little for the occupants of Yuuzhan Tar to do but await word of the outcome. Even for a prefect who had already contributed some of his own blood to ensure victory, and who wasn't inclined to fraternize with the commoners gathered in prayer at the various temples. Instead, Noma Nor had opted for an afternoon nap. But he had barely shut his eyes when his cushioned sleeping pallet began to shake,
with such increasing force that it was bucking across the room when he was finally tipped from it and sent sprawling onto the floor. Overhead, cracks and fissures were spreading across the dome ceiling and down into the walls. A rumble built deep underground and rolled like a wave underfoot, sending objects near and far crashing. Nomanor crawled frantically for the ledge-like balcony that overlooked the place of hierarchy. Everything outside was in motion, shuddering and crumbling, and the quality of the afternoon light was changing, as if fading to twilight. Kneeling, Nomanor shielded his eyes and gazed toward the sun. But it wasn't Yuuzhan'tar's primary that had everyone in a panic. It was the crescent of planet that took up an enormous portion of the lower sky. Even as he watched, the green arc thinned as it advanced visibly on the star. It was impossible to judge the planet's distance or true size, but it was twice as large as the shining orb it seemed intent on driving from the sky. And it suddenly struck Nomanor that the rainbow bridge had vanished. Clasping his hands on the balcony balustrade, he hauled himself to his feet. Across the quadrangle, the facade of a structure collapsed, burying hundreds of Yuuzhan Vong under jagged chunks of Yorick coral. Then a harsh and terrible wind blew in, uprooting trees and toppling statues. The wind filled the air with so much grit that the permacrete bones of many a New Republic building and skyscraper were laid bare. A roar raced through the sky, and a crevice split the ground, running diagonally through the quadrangle. Benches, shrubs, and a throng of hapless workers plummeted into the yawning opening. Nomanor planted his feet wide and stared into the sky, while the gale tugged at his tunic and tore tears from his eyes. Was this real, or a product of his feverish brain? Below the balcony, in arrant defiance of the daytime curfew Shimra had imposed on them, a band of shamed ones were down on their knees, raising their hideous faces and rail-thin arms in celebration of the newly arrived planet that was literally shaking Yuuzhan'tar to pieces. Weakly, fatalistically, Nomanor accepted the truth. Zonama Seacott had not only returned to known space, it had made Yuuzhan'tar its destination and target. The blank expression conveyed by the dedicated villa of Supreme Commander Saloop Thing belied the dread in his words.
The planet appeared out of dark space and hurtled into the Yuuzhan'tar system, fearsome one. It nearly grazed the Holy World, sundering the Rainbow Bridge and scattering the moons, the innermost of which nearly struck Yuuzhan'tar as it was outward bound. It is a catastrophe of epic proportions, War Master, as if engineered by the gods.
Enough, Commander, Naschoka said. The vessels under your watch will remain where they are. None should attempt to move against the intruding planet.
At your command, War Master.
The Armada will soon return, and I will decide then our best course of action.
The countenance of Saloop Thing smoothed out as the villa relaxed and inverted to its normal leathery aspect. Naschoka paced from the choir of Byats to his command bench, but found on arriving that he was too agitated to sit down. The War Master had ordered everyone but the chief tactician from Yamka's Mount's command chamber, and Naschoka turned to him now.
There have been rumors, the tactician said carefully, of a world capable of moving through dark space.
The world encountered by Commander Krasmir's reconnaissance force during the reign of Quoriel, Naschoka said.
War Master, the tactician said, could this alleged living planet be nothing more than a fabrication of the Alliance, or more accurately, the Jedi?
Naschoka considered it.
I would hear more of this.
Fearsome one, perhaps this world, this fabrication, is the secret strategy the Alliance was engineering while we readied the Armada for the battle at Mon Calamari. All the rushing about, all the diversion observed at Khontroom and Kalula and other worlds, Perhaps all that was executed in an attempt to divert our eye from what was being fabricated and prepared for launch.
Only a fool would reject the possibility out of hand, tactician, Naschoka said.
But suppose for a moment that it is not a fabrication, but an actual living world. The source of the rumors that have endured since before the invasion began.
The tactician frowned.
If that proves to be true, and if indeed the infidels have coaxed it to enter the war on their side, then they have perpetrated their greatest transgression yet.
Naschoka nodded sullenly, then took a deep breath.
Whichever the case, the Alliance waited too long to spring this surprise. With our war vessels only 2 jumps from Yuuzhan'tar, and additional battle groups being recalled from Hut Space and other sectors, no intruder, living or fabricated, can prevail.
The Millennium Falcon meandered with design through a press of large and slowly tumbling asteroids. Just short of the outer edge of the field, the freighter slipped into the shadow of an enormous hunk of cratered rock, matching velocities with it so as to remain concealed. No sooner had the Falcon returned to Mon Calamari from Kalula than Han and Leia had heard from Luke and Mara. With the holonet crippled and Luke and Mara transmitting from Jade Shadow, the conversation had been garbled and brief. Han had summarized the events that had led to the ultimately bewildering battle at Mon Calamari, and Luke had as much as said that the Jedi search party had ridden Zonama Seacot back to known space. Despite the fact that the Yuuzhan Vong Armada had returned to Coruscant, Luke had assured Han and Leia that it was safe for them to join the Jedi on the living planet, and that Vergeer had been correct about Zonama Seacot's being the key to ending the war. He promised to explain fully when they arrived. Dismayed by what had unfolded on Kalula, Han and Leia had departed almost immediately for the Core, but not before both of them had been thoroughly examined by medical teams, and Leia had met with Alliance Chief of State Kal Omas to acquaint him with the tragic truth about Alpha Red and what its deployment may have loosed on the galaxy. They had taken the long way to the Coruscant system, jumping the thoroughly repaired Falcon to Kashyyyk, Kola 4, and Kaminoor, then skirting the Corellian trade spine into the Core. At the same time, Sov and Creefe had united the scattered Alliance fleets in the mid-rim at Khontroom. A proximity alert sounded in the Falcon's cockpit. Coming into visual range, Leia said. Han began to edge the Falcon out from behind the asteroid. Let's have another look at those charts. Leia pointed out the wraparound bay. There. Han sighted down her finger, far to starboard, to a gibbous green planet.
Well, it's sure no moon.
Or Death Star, Leia said. With a squeaking of joints, C-3PO entered the cockpit.
Excuse me, Princess Leia and Captain Solo, but I wondered if I might view with my own photoreceptors our destination.
He motioned behind him.
Mistress Silgal would also like to see the living planet.
The Mon Calamari healer wasn't the only Jedi on board. Kenth Hamner, Waxarn Kel, Markra Medjev, and several others were in the forward compartment. Still other Jedi were due to arrive at Zonama Seacot aboard Errant Venture. Jaina, Kip, Lobaka, Alima Rar, and the Wild Knights had come by Starfighter. Leia turned to the comm board.
Jade Shadow, this is the Millennium Falcon, she said. Just wanted to let you know that we're in the neighborhood.
Luke's voice issued from the cockpit annunciators.
Leia, welcome to Zonama Seacot.
Luke, Han here. I'm not imagining this right. I mean, that's really a planet I'm seeing, and not the after effects of being bitten by an amphistaff.
Zonama Seacot is every bit as real as the Falcon, Han.
You've got a lot of explaining to do, Han said. How about giving us some landing instructions?
Luke fell briefly silent.
Han, I'm afraid you're going to have to leave the Falcon in synchronous orbit.
Han showed Leia a puzzled look and muted the mic. The pollen must be affecting him. He reactivated the mic.
You're kidding, right?
I'm dead serious,
Luke said.
Booster's going to have to do the same.
Han worked his jaw in annoyance. I don't like it, but I'll do it if I have to. Who's this C-Cut anyway? The governor or something?
C-Cut is the planetary consciousness.
Han blinked. Say again, Jade Shadow? I thought I heard you say planetary consciousness.
Han, I told you I'll explain everything when you're planet side. Your transport should be visible to the Falcon scanners just about now.
Leia and Han watched the display screen. Shortly, a vessel that might almost have been Yuuzhan Vong Grone came into view. The ship's lobed, faintly luminescent hull was made up of six oval modules, smooth as skipping stones and seamlessly joined, knife sharp. The leading edges of the modules glowed with what appeared to be organiform circuitry. From the moment Leia stepped from the pulsing, multicolored cabin of the Sakotan ship and beheld the sight of her son, her brother, her sister-in-law, and so many friends, some of whom she hadn't seen in almost a year, and all of whom were standing against the backdrop of incredibly tall and wondrous trees, her heart skipped a beat. She felt like a child again. Leia didn't know whom to embrace first, but since Han had captured Jason in a wampa hug, she went straight to Luke and Mara, throwing an arm around each of them and tugging them to her.
There were times I thought I'd never see you again, she said, her eyes closed in joyous relief.
No sooner had Leia let go of them than Jason was in front of her, smiling enigmatically.
Mom, he said.
You look changed, Jason. More than after your time on Coruscant.
I am different, he said. Zonama Seacott has matured me.
Leia turned through a slow circle, her gaze falling on Saba Sebatine, Danny Kui, Tekli, Corin Horn, Tahiri Vela. All of them seemed to be re-experiencing their initial awe of the planet through the eyes of the newcomers.
You all look so different, Leia said to her son. Is it the months we've been apart, or is it something about this extraordinary place?
Seacut makes a lasting impression, he said ambiguously.
Leia turned another slow circle, trying to commit every scene of reunion to memory. There was bearded Corin, welcoming Myrax, along with his father-in-law, Booster Terek. Elsewhere, Silgal and Tekli were conversing in the latter's native Chadrafan. Danny, her blonde hair elaborately braided, was surrounded by Talon Card, Lando, Tandra Rice and Calrissian, and several other members of the Smugglers Alliance, who were celebrating with sips of Corellian brandy from a shiny flask. Saba and some of the Barabel Wild Knights, including Saba's son Tessar, were having an animated conversation, as were C-3PO and R2-D2. Yet by far the most arresting sight of all was the manner in which Kenth, Kip, Lobaka, Alima, Octa Ramus, and more than a dozen other Jedi were clustered around Luke, who now stood in the center of the circle his comrades had formed around him, some of them seated, some of them actually down on one knee, paying close attention to everything he was telling them, his every word about Zonama, the planet, and Seacott, the planet's animating consciousness.
He has become a true master, Leia thought.
Leia, Han, Luke called out, I want you to meet someone. When they returned to the landing platform, Luke introduced them to a middle-aged woman he called Magister Jabatha.
Seacott has agreed to fashion living ships for some of the Jedi, Jabatha told everyone gathered. The process will require several days, but I promise you that it will be unlike anything any of you have ever experienced.
Luke's expression promised even greater surprises to come.
There's someone else I want you to meet, he said for everyone to hear.
Turning to the Faroans, he called one of them forward, a tall man who lowered the hood of his cloak as he approached, revealing a face of tattoos and scars, a hint of nose, a sloping forehead. Leia felt Han tense beside her. This is Harar, Luke said, a high priest of the Yuuzhan Vong. He too is going to help us end this war.
I commanded the litter-bearers to make haste, Dreadlord, Nomenor said, prostrate on the unyielding floor, so that I might serve you all the faster. Nomenor could feel the force of Shimra's enhanced vision as the Supreme Overlord gazed down from the throne in his private chambers in the crown of the Citadel.
Let us see how quick you can be, Prefect, by telling me why I sent for you.
Because I have failed you again, Lord. About Ebok 9, I was duped. At Zonama Sikat, I evidently did less than I should have. The living world is here, and now Yuuzhan Tar itself is threatened. Death and nothing less is all I warrant.
Probably so,
Shimra said.
But not because of the arrival of Zonama Sikat. For that, it is the gods who have failed me.
With his face pressed to the floor, Nomenor's baffled expression was hidden from view. Although out of the corner of his eye, he could see Anami kneeling down as if to get a closer look at his face.
The gods, Lord?
Shimra issued a short laugh.
You are unrivaled, Prefect. Even in this darkest hour, your skepticism holds fast. You accept as truth only what your one eye shows you.
He paused, then said,
Rise and look upon me.
Nomenor took a quick glance around as he was getting to his feet. The room was absent priests, attendants, slayers, or courtesans. It was just the three of them.
I am certain you remember that I told you our real war was with the gods.
I remember, Lord.
And I'm equally certain you dismissed my words as those of someone deranged.
Never! Shimra waved him silent.
You and I know exactly what Zonama Sikat is. There is no denying the truth of it, and no denying the threat it represents to everything I have attempted to bring about in this galaxy. You told me that you had sabotaged the world, and I do not doubt that you tried. And yet, it outwits us again.
Nomenor waited.
The gods deliberately saved it,
Shimra said.
They spared it your treachery, and they placed it in the hands of the Jedi.
He shook the scepter of power in anger.
This is an act of war on their part. Their salvo against those who would retire them and rule in their stead.
Fortunately, Shimra wasn't expecting a response, because Nomenor was speechless.
It follows, then, that if we destroy Zonama Sikat once and for all, we will not only have defeated the Jedi, but will have also vanquished the gods themselves.
Shimra waved the formidable-looking amphistaff again.
To do that, we must respond with a salvo of our own. If I can't divest the gods of their power over us, then I can at least attempt to turn them against one another.
How, Lord? Nomenor asked in complete befuddlement. Shimra glared at him.
I am granting you special powers as my envoy. High Prefect Rathul will hear this from my own lips. As my envoy, it will be your duty to inform the priests in all the temples that they are to cease performing rituals to Yun Yuuzhan and Yum Yamka, and instead to devote all their labors to venerating Yun Harla.
But the trickster is believed by many of the priests to have already played a role in our setbacks, Nomenor said. In the Hapis Consortium and at Borlaeus. The Jedi, Jaina Solo, even masqueraded as her and outlived Savang La.
All the better, then.
Shimra replied calmly.
Because already Yun Harla's head swells with conceit. The gods are already jealous of her. And now we will give them something to get angry about. We will do to them precisely what they did to us during the voyage through the void. Set them against one another. Then, while they are occupied fighting among themselves, while their attention is diverted from us, we will strike at Zonama Sikat and be finished. with all of them.
Everyone rose as Luke, Mara, and the other Jedi entered Ra'Ru's war room.
"Wonderful to see you safe and sound,"
Admiral Treyas Creefe said from his position of prominence at the head conference table. The conference tables formed a square around which were gathered more than 20 Alliance commanders and strategists, including Admiral Cian Sov, Commodore Brand, Generals Garmbel Iblis, Aaron Kraken, Wedge Antilles, and Kian Farlander, Grand Admiral Gilad Pellion, and Queen Mother Tenel Ka. In a noisy holofield transmitted from an undisclosed location stood half-sized images of Cal Omas and several of his chief advisors, including Niuk Niuv, Golden-Furred Kamasi Reliki Akla, former Judicial Prosecutor Talam Ranth, and Jedi Master Trasina Lobi. Luke, Mara, and Kenth took seats along the side of the square reserved for them. Silgal and Towering Madurin opted to stand. Luke had wanted to have Kip accompany them, but he, Lobaka, Corrin, and many of the other Jedi Knights had remained on Zonama Sikot to begin the process of bonding with seed partners, the embryos of Sikotan ships. Creefe cleared his throat in a meaningful way.
"Because time is of the essence, I will come straight to the point. Preparations are underway to move the combined fleets to Korralag as phase one of the planned assault on Coruscant."
"How soon will you launch?" Luke said.
"Within 72 standard hours."
Luke glanced around the tables, his gaze lingering slightly, almost clandestinely, on Wedge, Tenel Ka, and Kian Farlander. "All of you are in agreement on this?" Creefe nodded, seemingly for everyone.
"But that's not to say that we won't delay the countdown, or even rethink the operation if you can show good cause for our doing so."
"They have," Luke said.
Sov looked at him. "Just where have you been, Master Skywalker?" "In the unknown regions, searching for Zonama Sikot." "The planet you appear to have ushered into the Coruscant system," Brand said.
Luke turned to the human Commodore. "I had no more to do with ushering Zonama Sikot into known space than I did with designing the planet's hyperspace engines. It came of its own volition."
"It?"
Brand said. "Zonama Sikot," Luke repeated. Creefe and Brand swapped perplexed glances.
"We're eager to hear your reaction to our plans," the Bothan said.
Luke nodded. "When I learned that you'd move the combined fleets from Mon Calamari, I assumed that Coruscant was to be the target."
"Were we wrong to reposition?"
"No," Luke said emphatically. "With the Holonet incapacitated, the closer we are to Coruscant, the better."
"Korralag is closer still," Sov said in a leading way.
Luke firmed his lips. "Korralag is too close. By moving there, we're certain to provoke a response from the Yuuzhan Vong." Celestin Niuk Niuv spoke to it.
"The Yuuzhan Vong are going to want to finish what they began at Mon Calamari. Whether the flotilla repositions or holds fast, an enemy response is guaranteed."
"Not necessarily," Luke said. "The presence of Zonama Sikot has thrown Coruscant into turmoil. By now, the so-called heretics are rising up, and the elite and the military are divided on what course of action they should take."
"The reports we have received corroborate that Coruscant is in turmoil," Creefe allowed, "which is precisely the reason to strike. The Yuuzhan Vong may never be this weak again. Yes, Shimra stands a chance of being brought down by the heretics, but it's not Shimra we're worried about. We're worried about the Armada. We succeeded in inflicting damage at Mon Calamari, and unless we follow through now, we fear we'll lose what scant advantage we have."
"The Armada isn't any weaker now than it was when Mon Calamari was attacked," Kent said. "What damage we did has been offset by the arrival of Yuuzhan Vong battle groups from far-flung sectors. More important, Coruscant's planetary shields, the Dovin basal gravitic fields, have yet to be tested, let alone stormed."
"We're not concerned about the orbital Dovin basals," Sov said in a dismissive way.
"Regardless, attacking Coruscant is not the solution," Luke said. "Under Shimra's influence, the world brain has the capacity to render the entire planet uninhabitable. So unless that's our aim,
We must rethink our strategy.
Creefay regarded Luke. You must understand. If it were any world other than Coruscant. But retaking Coruscant is fundamental to building and maintaining the Galactic Alliance. Who controls Coruscant controls the core, and without the core, the Alliance is nothing.
Luke set his elbows on the table and interlocked his fingers. You're thinking like the New Republic did. Creefay was quick to change the subject.
We have a window of opportunity that could seal itself at any moment. How long would the Jedi have us wait?
Luke frowned. It's not a matter of days or weeks. The Yuuzhan Vong have demonstrated time and again that they won't surrender. It's no more in their nature than a policy of extermination is in ours. He looked around.
Unless all of you have changed dramatically in my absence.
Would you cede them, Coruscant? Aaron Kraken asked.
If I thought it would end the war, I might.
That's a treasonous statement, Brand said.
Creefay shot Brand a warning look.
For the sake of argument, and in the spirit of good fellowship, what would you have us do while we're waiting for things to unravel on Coruscant?
Divide and redistribute the combined fleets, Kent said. Dispatch battle groups to Bothawi, Bilbrinji, and other essential worlds. Reclaim those systems while the Yuuzhan Vong are preoccupied with the heretics. Then, when they are truly at their weakest, move against Coruscant from as many systems as possible.
Sov made a fatigued sound.
Perhaps the Jedi are unaware that several Yuuzhan Vong battle groups have not heeded Nas Choka's orders to withdraw to the core.
The dereliction of those commanders has nothing to do with maintaining superiority, Luke said. They're afraid that they will be ordered to attack Zonama Seacott.
Creefay shook his head in confusion. Why should they be afraid? Just what is this planet to them?
Luke stood up, encouraging everyone to focus on him. Everything the Yuuzhan Vong might have been. He paused, then added, 50 years ago, when the Yuuzhan Vong were first scouting our galaxy, they attempted to claim Zonama Seacott, and the planet fought them off. As a living world, it figures deeply in their religion, and its sudden reappearance is viewed as an omen of defeat, a sign from the gods that the invasion itself was a terrible mistake. In some respect, the Shamed Ones view the planet as important to their destiny, their liberation, and they will revolt if Shimra sanctions an attack. But the real danger to Shimra will come finally from his elite, some of whom are bound to see Zonama Seacott as a divine intervention.
Sov was beginning to lose patience. If Zonama Seacott has some secret plan for ending the war, as either mediator or battle station, it had better act quickly. As things stand, I see no reason to alter our plans for moving against Korolag.
There's no room for neutrality at this stage, Brand said. You're part of the Alliance, or you're against it.
Galad Pellion broke a brief but uneasy silence.
I've been reluctant to broach this, but the Imperial record suggests that former Grand Moff Tarkin once expressed interest in Zonama Seacott, based on rumors that the planet was capable of producing living ships.
Sov and the others watched Luke.
Is that the planet's secret?
The Celestin asked.
Is Zonama Seacott planning to wage its own war on the Yuuzhan Vong?
Zonama Seacott will not produce warships, Luke said flatly. He was about to add more when Tycho Selchu suddenly entered the war room. Before Tycho so much as uttered a word, Luke caught Silgal's sharp intake of breath.
Please forgive the interruption, Admiral Sov, the blue-eyed human general said in a low voice. I regret to inform everyone that my wife Winter has just contacted me from Mon Calamari with news that retired Admiral Akbar has died.
Look at you, cowering like a herd of Yanskaks.
The Supreme Overlord railed at the elite from his spike-back throne in the Citadel's Hall of Confluence.
On the eve of victory, you allow yourselves to be frightened by an illusion. A piece of celestial chicanery.
Shimra raised the Scepter of Power toward the Hall's rib ceiling,
Some of you are whispering that the bright light that rises at sunset is an omen of doom. A living world rumored to have been encountered during the rule of my predecessor, whose name I will not deign to mention. I am not unacquainted with this rumor. Following my ascension to the throne, I dispatched forces to search out this world, this Zonama Seacot, only to be informed that it was not to be found. So I asked myself, had it disappeared? Had Zonama Seacot been destroyed? Or was it nothing more than a lie perpetrated by my predecessor in an attempt to keep us from conquering and occupying what was by God's given right our entitled domain?
While Shimra paused, Anami circulated among the audience, baiting members of the elite to respond.
I will reveal the truth of it,
the Supreme Overlord said at last.
The bright light is not a trick of the eye. It is, in fact, the same living world.
The audience was stunned into a profound silence, especially Drathul and his coterie of Quo'Real supporters. But the pronouncement was every bit as staggering to Nomanor. Coming clean was the last thing he had expected Shimra to do. Shimra paused again while a tremor rumbled the citadel. Then he pointed the scepter to Kila Quad and her adepts.
The Shapers know what I'm referring to when I speak of the Eighth Cortex. But for you commanders and intendants, even for some of you priests, I will explain. A cortex contains the protocols for shapings. The protocols that originally guided the hands of our ancestors in creating Dovin Basals and Vilips, Coral Skippers and Yamisks. It is not a place, but a state of mind. And as one approaches the superlative cortex, the Eighth Cortex, one comes full circle to the beginnings of the Yuuzhan Vong, to our primordial state of being. And what I found there, after enduring much pain and letting of blood, so much blood that my body howled in torment, was the solution, cast in the form of a simple lesson, such as might be taught to our spawn in the creches. The lesson is this, that when they fashioned the universe, and ultimately the Yuuzhan Vong, the gods dispensed with all inequities by ensuring that the qualities of one creation would always balance the qualities of another. Where a poisonous tree takes root, adjacent to it stands a tree that provides the antidote for the poison. Where there are deserts, there are oases of water. And where the waters are vast, there emerge islands of sand and stone. This is the way of the gods, ensuring balance at every turn.
Once more, the elite had to wait, while a more powerful quake shook the citadel, causing Yorick coral dust to rain from the vaulted ceiling high overhead.
The solution has only just been delivered to Yuuzhan Tar. Delivered in the form of a stricken space vessel and its crew of afflicted slayers and a dying shaper. On a remote and insignificant world known as Kalula, the vessel and its passengers fell prey to a virulent chemical agent created by our enemy and released in the hope of destroying all things Yuuzhan Vong, from myself down to the simplest of our creations. The chemical agent might have done just that, had it not been for the acuity of the Shaper, the unconventional actions of his valorous crew of warriors, and the perceptiveness of your Supreme Overlord, who ordered that the vessel be kept from setting down on Yuuzhan Tar or coming in contact with any other vessels. Now, witness the beauty of cosmic balance at work. Shurok Yunchilat. Witness the will of the gods. For this ill-omened world that lights our night sky, this living world encountered by our forces so many years ago, drifting at the very rim of this galaxy, must too have been fashioned by Yun Yuuzhan and be linked to us in prophecy. Linked, and therefore vulnerable to the deadly contagion fashioned by our enemy and sanctioned by the gods.
Once more, Shimrod gesticulated with the scepter of power.
The crippled vessel is the Amphistaff we will hurl to drive the stranger from our gate. The ship that shall be our salvation, and our means of transcending the test the gods have seen fit to engineer. So Nama Sikot is a Death Star.
He aimed his Amphistaff at Nas Choka and his supreme commanders.
Fly to it, War Master. Take your mighty armada to Sonama Sikot and make clear to the gods the unflinching resolve of the Yuuzhan Vong.
Mired at Khon Troom for longer than they had anticipated, Luke and Mara had missed the seed partner ceremony. But everyone who had participated was still talking about it long after Jade Shadow returned to Sonama Sikot. After listening to a dozen separate accounts of the ceremony from as many Jedi, Luke almost felt as if he had attended it personally, and he was eager to see the living ships. Sikot had had extensive conversations with Danny and now Silgal about Dovin Basels, and Lobaka and others were trying to figure a way to use comlinks for ship-to-ship communication. With so much information to catch up on, Luke had decided to wait for the proper moment to report on the briefings at Khon Troom. He chose to do that in the Skywalker's cliff dwelling, even though few Jedi were present. Assembled were Jason, Jaina, Kip, Corrin, Saba, Tahiri, Danny, Han, Leia, Magister Jabatha, Harar, C-3PO, and R2-D2. Jason was the first one to comment on Luke's lengthy summary.
Did you explain to Admiral Creefay what the World Brain will do if Coruscant's attacked?
Han growled in exasperation.
Forget about the World Brain. Can Creefay even get past the planetary Dovin Basels?
I think I know why, Luke said. Zonama Sikot not only tugged one of Coruscant's moons out of orbit, but also tore apart the planetary ring that the Yuuzhan Vong manufactured from the moon they managed to shatter. The Dovin Basels are probably so busy dealing with infalling debris that they can now be overwhelmed by lasers, concussion missiles, and whatever else Creefay plans to hurl at them.
That still won't stop the World Brain from carrying out its tasks, Jason said.
That's correct, Harar said, then looked questioningly at Jason.
I wasn't able to communicate with the Duryam while we were in the unknown regions, and I haven't been able to sense it in the same way since we got back.
Then perhaps Shimra has managed to establish a rapport with the brain.
Leia forced a sad exhalation.
Hundreds of thousands will die, and the planet will be of no use to anyone.
Unless we can get to Shimra first, Luke said. Can the Citadel be penetrated?
With the Armada fending off an attack, the Dovin Basels and World Brain preoccupied, the Shamed Ones in revolt. Yes, it might be possible to infiltrate with a small force. I could advise you on the best route.
You'd do that? Leia said, gazing at Harar. The priest nodded.
I said I would do everything in my power to help end this conflict. Nothing has happened to cause me to reconsider that.
Who and how many of us? Kip asked.
Luke thought for a moment.
Not more than 6 of us. And no one who is waiting for a Sakodan ship.
Kip nodded, and Han and Leia traded uncertain glances.
Where's that leave the rest of us? Han asked.
Before Luke could answer the question, Kenth, Silgal, and Lobaka entered the cliff dwelling, the Wookiee ducking low enough to keep from banging his furry head into the crude beams that spanned the high ceiling.
Someone calm Jade Shadow, Luke said.
Kenth nodded.
The Alliance has reclaimed Korolag. Wedge's battle group has been ordered to Muscave to lure the Armada away from Coruscant, so the major offensive can begin.
Then the war is coming to us, Jabatha said softly.
Errant Venture is on the way here, Silgal added, in case you're thinking of evacuating the Ferroans or anyone else.
Jaina shot to her feet. I should be with my squadron.
Mara looked at her.
You are, Jaina.
How's that?
She asked harshly.
I mean that you're needed here, Mara said calmly.
War Master Nas Choka gave Yuuzhan Tarr a final glance, as Yamka's mounts, powerful Dovan basals, prepared to tug the vessel into dark space for the short journey to the outer system world known as Muscave. A swirl with clouds, the green hemisphere that was Yuuzhan'tar had changed dramatically in the short time since the armada had launched for Mon Calamari. Smoke was chimneying from volcanic vents. It was absent one of its moons, and the Bridge of the Gods had collapsed, all but force-fed rock by rock to the orbiting Dovan basals tasked with shielding the world from attack. Hands clasped behind his back, the Warmaster spun away from the view of Yuuzhan'tar. Several strides across the course deck took him to the Villip Choir, where the mistress in charge of the array bowed her head in subordination.
"I would speak with the Shepar aboard the failing vessel," Naschoka said.
The mistress stroked the appropriate Villip, which inverted and assumed the sickly likeness of the Shaper who had been poisoned at Kalula.
"My only surviving Villip is dying, Warmaster," the ashen Shaper reported. "It lacks the vigor to portray your visage, but I suspect it is capable of relaying your words."
"Speak to the health of yourself and your crew, Shaper," Naschoka said. "Do you have the vigor to carry out what has been commanded of you?"
The Villip's thick lips formed words.
"Four slayers have died. Six remain. A sufficient number to pilot this ailing vessel. I am alive only by dint of chemical compounds I managed to mix and ingest at the onset of my paralysis. But my time is short, Warmaster."
"If need be, I will send hale warriors and youthful Villips to assist you, Shaper. But only you can keep the vessel itself alive. If it dies before we reach Zonama Sikot, then all is lost."
"I fear it is incapable of going to dark space, Warmaster."
Naschoka ground his filed teeth and swung to his chief tactician.
"Advise me of our options."
"Allow it to be ingested by a larger vessel, Warmaster," the tactician said. "A sacrifice of yet another vessel and its crew, but essential to our task."
Naschoka nodded and turned back to the transmitting Villip.
"Shaper, command the vessel's Dovan basals, Villips, and weapons to rest. I will dispatch a vessel of sufficient size to engulf yours and carry it through dark space to Zonama Sikot. Once there, the Slayers will pilot your vessel from its carapace. Then, under whatever escort I deem necessary, you will consign yourself and your vessel to the living world."
"An honor that finds me undeserving, Warmaster."
"Succeed, and undreamed of rewards await you, Shaper. Fail, and suffer the disgrace of having sentenced our entire species to oblivion."
One didn't have to be a native of Coruscant to know that the planet had seen better days. Hollows, displayed at the permission briefings, didn't do justice to the extent to which the Yuuzhan Vong had transformed the world, and Zonama Sikot had wounded it. As green as the Chiss capital of Scylla was white, vast areas were now blackened by fire and fractioned by sinuous flows of lava. Jag absorbed the desolation in a glance as his clawcraft swooped from the open belly of the Star Destroyer right to rule. Twin Sun's complement of clawcraft and X-Wing streaked behind him in a trailing wedge. Off to Jag's port side and slightly to stern flew Rogue Squadron. To starboard, the Wraiths and Tanab Yellow Aces. Centered and shielded by the near wing of starfighters were three lightly armed troop transports. The enemy flotilla that rushed to meet the Fourth Fleet was made up of light cruiser and assault cruiser analogs, from whose hull panels jutted forked arms housing plasma cannon emplacements and clusters of coral skippers.
"Shield trios," Jag commanded his group over the tactical net. "Stick close to the transports and stay alert for course corrections. Don't allow yourselves to be drawn into individual conflicts."
The broad-bank Sunward placed the trio of transports and their starfighter escorts over Daybreak Coruscant. No sooner was the task force clear of right to rule than all its starboard quad-laser batteries belched fire. Not far from the Star Destroyer, and similarly aligned to the planet, two Mon Cal MC-80Bs and the cruiser Dauntless added their blinding salvos to the light storm. Half the amassed firepower was directed at the onrushing coral skippers, dozens of which were instantly vaporized. The other half was aimed at what remained of Coruscant's short-lived planetary ring. Hammered by massive packets of coherent light and high-yield proton torpedoes, the largest pieces of what had once been a moon broke into thousands of even smaller fragments, creating a meteor storm, the likes of which Coruscant probably hadn't confronted since it had coalesced into a planet. Enormous singularities began to open as the chunks were sent tumbling into the upper reaches of the envelope. But the orbital Dovin basals that had created the gravitic anomalies were already overburdened, and many of the fragments plummeted past them, becoming fiery streaks as they entered the atmosphere.
"Twin suns," Right to Rule Control said. "You have opened windows at coordinates 423 and 425. Rathana Transport is reorienting to follow you through."
Jag passed the word to his pilots, even though the navicomputers on each starfighter had certainly received the course corrections. Flying just at the perimeter of the transport shields, Jag's clawcraft was jarred by every projectile that found its target. Carefully trained laser bolts from Right to Rule created a sudden corridor of destructive energy around the transport and fighters. A dozen more skips became extra fodder for the meteor-gobbling Dovin basals. The Dovin basals were trying desperately to prioritize, but more and more rock fragments were getting past them. As overtaxed as they were, the gigantic Biot still posed a threat to any ship that ventured too close. For that reason, the transports had been retrofitted with Bakuran-designed HIMS generators, which should have allowed them to sustain momentum, even in an interdiction field. Jag's group of Vanguard starfighters was just passing between a pair of the Yuuzhan Vong orbital monstrosities when two overlapping singularities yawned, catching the pointed bow of the transport and dragging it hard to starboard. The ship's aged cylindrical thrusters tried to compensate for the unexpected tug of gravity, but they weren't up to the challenge. The jury-rigged HIMS failed, and the deflector shields followed. The transport twisted over on its side and began to founder. Armor flayed from the hull, and surface modules disappeared into the swirling black mouth of the singularity. Breaches opened, venting precious atmosphere and unsecured objects. Then, deep within the vessel, an explosion flashed, and it split wide open. In the blink of an eye, Twin Suns lost another three fighters. Right to Rule Control boomed in Jag's ears.
"Twin Suns leader, come about to 003. You are redesignated escort for number one transport. As soon as your group is clear, we're going to try to burn a tunnel to the surface."
Jag hauled on the control yoke, gravitational forces all but burying him in the seat as he slewed to port. As promised, coordinated laser fire came from the capital ships. The control yoke shuddered in Jag's grip as he powered the clawcraft into denser air. The ship rattled as if on the verge of coming apart, but it held together. Surface features of Coruscant began to come into focus. Forest-covered spires and mounds, wide crevasses brimming with mist yet to be burned off by the sun. A contour map resolved on the cockpit navigational display, showing the buildings and features of the so-called Sacred Precinct, from the craggy mountain that was Shimra's worldship citadel to the dome-like structure that housed and protected the World Brain, what had once been the most affluent and fashionable area of the planet. A counter at the bottom of the screen showed the distance remaining to the scorched landing zone, which was surrounded by dense forest and Yorick coral outcroppings. Without warning, enemy artillery fire erupted from the tree line around the clearing, fountaining molten ejecta and flaming projectiles high into the air. Dodging projectiles, Jag banked over the forest. He was doubling back to the transport when he finally caught sight of its sister ship, 10 kilometers to the south and covered stem to stern in gruchons. Jag watched helplessly as the vessel bellied into the forest, cutting a wide burning swath through the trees. Sliding for a kilometer or more, it tipped nose first over the rim of a deep crevasse and began a slow descent toward the bottom. Jag swung wide to make another pass over the forest. With projectiles streaking out of the trees, Gavin Darklighter's rogues buzzed like angry hornets, torching everything that moved. Jag was racing to join them when a fireball caught the clawcraft from behind, blowing away pieces of the starboard solar panels and sending him into an uncontrollable spin.
The crowns of the trees rushed up at him, then patches of soggy ground. The clawcraft whined as it slammed into the canopy, and darkness engulfed him. The view forward from the plush cockpit of Lady Luck revealed a panorama of stroboscopic globular explosions stretched across, as well as 2 or 3 degrees above and below, the ecliptic plane.
That was the Alliance's salvo, Lando told Tendra.
No sooner had the spherical explosions faded than a pyrotechnic display of what might have been fire-tailed comets rocketed from unseen sources, splaying against deflector screens too distant to discern, and in some cases, creating explosions of their own.
Naz Choka's response, Lando said dryly.
He flipped a switch on the communications console and swiveled his chair slightly toward the cockpit's audio pickups.
You watching this?
Can't take my eyes away,
Talon Card answered from Wildcard, 500 kilometers rimward, and, like Lady Luck, running mostly silent.
How long are we just going to sit here and watch? Lando asked Talon. Talon laughed bitterly.
Now is as good a time as any to make our meager but skillful contribution to the cause.
All right, then.
Lando straightened up in his seat and was preparing to wake up the ship's systems when Talon calmed him again.
Hold on a minute, hero. My scanners are picking up something peculiar. I'm sending you the coordinators now. You might want to have a look.
Tendra was already realigning the scanners when Lando glanced at the display screen. A sizable number of Yuuzhan Vong ships had separated from the main body of the Armada. Accreting velocity, the group was vectoring for the sunward fringe of the battle belt. Tendra dialed the scanners to maximum magnification. The computer-assisted portrait, painted by the instruments, showed a diamond-shaped formation of destroyer and heavy cruiser analogs, with a solitary but otherwise unremarkable vessel occupying the center.
They're going to hyperspace,
Talon updated.
Did you get a departure vector?
Coming up.
Lando and Tendra heard Talon expel his breath in unhappy surprise.
Zonama Seacott, Lando surmised.
Gingerly, Han placed the palms of his hands against the faintly glowing hull of the Sakotan ship. Warm to the touch, the perfectly smooth skin was a shimmering green, lit from within in a way that brought to mind the bioluminescence of some denizens of the deep ocean. Low to the ground, broad where the cockpit was, and composed of 3 seamlessly joined oval lobes, the ship was a smaller version of the shuttle that had carried him from the Falcon to the surface of the planet. But unlike the shuttle, it was armed with plasma cannons that might have been, and probably were, patterned after those of a coral skipper. Speechless, Han continued his survey of the wondrous ship. Small compared to Jade Shadow, which sat on its hardstand nearby, the Sakotan fighter was equivalent to an X-Wing in size, though it more closely resembled a vintage Saronian Conqueror or one of the latest generation of Mon Calamarian starfighters. The single-pilot cockpit was an all-too-organic shade of red, made more unnerving by an instrument array that pulsed and throbbed. None of them had been flown, but Han could feel the eagerness of the pilots. Kip, Korin, Lobaka, dark-complected Markra Medjev, facially scarred Waxern Kelm, the stocky Chandrillan woman Octa Ramus, slight Tama Jorjamin, gallant Kyle Katarn, the ever-brooding Zek, the bearable Saba Sebatine, and the Twi'lek woman Alima Rar, all of whom were circling their individual crafts, much as Han was circling Kip's.
Well, she's not the Falcon, Han said, but I'm sure she'll do until the next living ship comes along.
Kip took his gaze from the ship long enough to glance at Han and laugh.
Wish I could tell you to take it for a spin.
Han nodded.
Yeah, I wish you could too.
Distracted, Han wasn't aware of Leia's approach until she slipped her arm through his and rested her head against his shoulder. He turned slightly, expecting to see her smiling as broadly as he was. Instead, she was anything but joyful.
What's wrong?
Luke just heard from Booster. A Yuuzhan Vong battle group is headed here. Han stared at her.
I thought...
It was all he got out before Luke, Mara, Jaina, Danny, Kenth, and some of the other Jedi arrived at the landing platform.
The last to show up were Magister Jabatha, Jason, and Harar. The pilots hurried around their Sakotan ships to join the circle that quickly took shape around Luke.
"We were hoping for more time, but that's not going to happen," Luke began. "The Yuuzhan Vong are on the way, which means you're going to have to get your ships airborne and give yourselves a crash course in piloting them." He swung to face Tessar Sebatine. "The shuttle will take you and the rest of the Wild Knights to your blast bolt and fighters."
Luke took his lightsaber from his belt, ignited the blade, and held it over his head. Wordlessly, the other Jedi began to follow suit. Taking note of Leia's hesitation, Han nodded in encouragement.
"Go," he said quietly. "You're as much a Jedi as any of them."
The Jedi tightened up around Luke, angling their lightsaber slightly so that the tips pointed toward his, and in the end, creating a stand of colorful blades that thrummed ominously in the crisp air.
"This day has been years in the making. What we do from this moment forward will test our fealty to the Force in a way that the Jedi haven't been tested in more than a generation. Be mindful that we are not the purveyors of conflict and inequity, but the guardians of peace and justice. Above all, we want what the Force wants, no matter where that leads us. If some of us are not seen again today, that does not mean that our actions will have been in vain or will not be remembered."
Han looked to those who didn't have lightsabers, the few outside the circle, Jabatha, Harar, and Danny, wondering where he fit in. But he added his voice to the rest when they said as one, "May the Force be with us."